At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Mental Health Today Show. My name is John Cordray, and I'm a licensed therapist, and I'm the host of the show, and I've been doing the show for a very long time, and I really appreciate, for those of you who have been listening for a long time, I really, really appreciate you, and if this is one of your first times listening, hey, I want to welcome you to the show as well. I'm really excited to share my next guest here. He is a psychiatrist, a child, specializes in child and adolescent psychiatry. And he is also the co-founder and CEO of Frontier Psychiatry. And their mission is to reach the hard to reach, those who in rural America. If you think about maybe you live in rural areas, or you can just think about the difficulties of what just living in a rural area and the difficulties of getting quality mental health services and the struggles. So we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking to Dr. Eric Erzuvi. Is that right? All right. Got it. Oh, very good. So I noticed your name on LinkedIn is Dr. Zuby. Is that right?
Dr. Zubes. Yeah.
Or Zubes. Dr. Zubes. Yeah, I love it. That's great. Excellent.
Yeah, that's the old nickname from way back when.
Oh, that's Zubes. Awesome.
I added the doctor, yeah.
Yeah, I like it. Very good. Well, welcome, and I appreciate you coming on and taking some time to talk about this. It's so important to address this because, unless you live in rural areas in America, you don't realize how difficult getting quality mental health services is. And so I'm really excited, and you have your background, you're a psychiatrist that works with children and adolescents. That puts you in a very small percentage right there,
right
of child and adolescent psychiatrists. But then also on top of that, you have expertise and specialization in telepsychiatry, which I'm very excited in because I think that's here. It's with us right now, the telehealth, the technology. And I think that's so important to talk about. So I want to welcome you to the show and tell us a little bit about you and your story, kind of your background. And I really can't wait to get into what you're doing with Frontier Psychiatry.
Well, thanks, John. It's a pleasure and a privilege to be on the show. So my story is probably a little bit different for a psychiatrist. So I'm 55 now, but this is my second or third career. Right out of college, I actually worked as a financial journalist for Bloomberg for a couple of years. I was in Argentina doing that. And then I moved to New York City and worked as a bond trader on Wall Street until 1999. And around that time, maybe it was my early midlife crisis when I was around 29 years old and thought, man, is this how I want to spend the rest of my life? Do I want to be 80 years old, look back and say, hey, I bought and sold bonds for a living? And don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with it. A lot of people love it and are great at it, and that's their calling. But it wasn't mine. I always thought about the role model I always looked up to was my pediatrician, and I grew up mostly in Vermont. And so that was the person I kept thinking about. Visited with him a couple of times, and at some point decided to make the leap, go back to school. So I had to go do pre-med, then med school, then I had to decide what specialty to pick. I landed on psychiatry and eventually child psychiatry. And I finished all my training in 2013. And the reason I chose child psychiatry is while I was doing my pre-med work, I spent thousands and thousands of hours actually tutoring kids of all ages in math and science, and eventually got really interested in understanding kind of learning disabilities. And I really loved spending time with the kids and the families. That's how I landed on child psychiatry. 2013, I'm finishing up. There's this recruiting email that comes across my inbox about some place in Billings, Montana. And my wife and I, we kind of look at each other like, let's check it out. I know my wife had been to Montana and loved it. And I said, well, sure, you know, it's a free trip for an interview. Why not? Well, here I am. It's, 2024. I'm still in Billings, Montana. I ended up joining Billings Clinic, which is a big health system here in Montana. I worked for them from 2013 to 2019. And while I was there, it was really transformative for me because, number one, I finished all my I did all my training for med school and residency at Yale in New Haven, Connecticut. And as you can imagine, moving from New Haven, Connecticut, kind of the greater sort of northeast outside of New York City, very different than Billings, Montana, as you can imagine. And so when I moved here, I had no idea about the crisis that was facing folks in rural communities who were faced with mental illness, substance use disorders. You know, I imagine Montana, beautiful place. Everybody's got to be happy. That's great. I get here and discover Montana has the highest suicide rate in the country. And consistently for 40 years, Montana, Alaska, and Wyoming have ranked among the worst suicide rates in the country. And, you know, I was kind of taken aback when I ran into that information. So I spent 6 years at Billings Clinic. I ended up running the psychiatry department for 5 of those years, and I was in charge of inpatient psychiatry, outpatient psychiatry, as well as the emergency room work, taking care of people in crisis. And interestingly, Montana has been very active in telehealth and telepsychiatry, but certainly telehealth in general since the early 90s. Because Montana, like many very rural states, states with low population densities, huge swaths of you know, rural land dotted with small towns, access to healthcare can be incredibly difficult, challenging. And so telehealth has been used widely in Montana for a long time. And so as soon as I arrived in Montana in 2013, I started doing telehealth right away, just as part of my job. And, you know, and so during that time, as I got to understand more and more about the level of problems and risk and really crisis level of problems when it comes to accessing quality healthcare and mental health care, I said, man, we got to be doing something different. I was still having families drive, you know, four or five hours to see me for a half hour visit. The kid would have to miss school. Mom would have to miss work. They would have to stay in a hotel, spend all the money on gas. And I'm like, this has got to be making anxiety worse for everybody, like to come see me for a half hour. And so I really felt, you know, by 2019, I really felt like we had to really lean in more aggressively into telehealth. So it was around that time, me and my co-founder decided to launch what's now Frontier Psychiatry. We saw our first patient in March of 2020, which was right around the same time as COVID got its grips into the world, really. And things were really interesting as you know, all of a sudden people thought telehealth was a good idea in the rest of the country, and things kind of took off. And so, yeah, so here we are now, you know, 2024, we provide care now into all 56 counties across Montana. We have started providing care into Idaho, and later this year, we'll be starting our work in Alaska. And really our mission is to continue doing what we've been doing, and that is trying to find every nook and cranny of rural America that needs help delivering care. And really, every community deserves to have the same quality of care as you could get in New York City, Los Angeles. Why would a small town in Alaska deserve lesser quality of care? And so we feel really strongly about it. So that was a little bit of a long introduction, but I hope to give you a little bit of a picture of kind of who I am and how I landed here.
Yeah, no, that really resonates with me, and I appreciate you sharing that. You know, I worked in 2018 to 2021. I worked in a school system in rural America, and so it was these schools, little schools that were inside of little cornfields, right? And so, yeah. But the one thing I quickly recognized is the huge barrier of mental health services for the schools.
Yes.
The school district hired me as a mental health therapist to work with the kids. And we developed a system based on ACEs and how we used ACEs to track and identify kids of trauma. And it, quite frankly, it was overwhelming how many kids ranked. If you know, I know you know ACE, the ACEs, but for those who are listening, ACEs is adverse childhood experiences, and it's a way or a tool to identify the levels of trauma. And that's what we used in the school district. And we've discovered that kids with a score of 3 or higher were more likely to fail, drop out, and even a greater likelihood of an early death. And that was shocking to the school. And so they realized that these kids were struggling. A vast majority of them were struggling. And yet there was one or two mental health agencies in the town, and they were swamped and booked, and the wait list was months and months, 6 months or longer. And like you said, they would have to travel long distances to be able to get in. And so that was a problem for these schools to be able to, how do you reach these kids? And it was something that we developed, telehealth for the kids. And it was really helpful, and the kids got the services. So it really resonates with me that, one, you're a child psychiatrist, because I love working with kids and adolescents, but you're not afraid at all with technology. And you alluded to this earlier, before COVID, telehealth was kind of a, I don't know about that. That's all these security concerns and technology concerns. I know before I worked in a school district, I had a private practice, and I was able to do some telehealth, but very few clients felt comfortable. And COVID hits, and now it's definitely a tool that can really help a lot of people. So really excited and what you're doing with Frontier Psychiatry. Is it primarily psychiatrists, or what kind of help do you help with Frontier Psychiatry?
Sure. So I appreciate the work you did in schools. I mean, supporting schools is very critical, because too often we're asking schools and school districts to be all things to all kids. And, and it'd be the, sometimes, not always, but sometimes be the parent, be the clinic, be the mental health professional, be the guardian, and be the protector. We often ask our schools to do a lot and sometimes too much, so that, anything, people can do to collaborate with schools, I think is critical. And I also love that, that you are doing this in a trauma-informed way, which as you well know, and probably many listeners can appreciate, is, it's pretty critical, because ACEs are everywhere. I mean, 2/3 of the entire population have at least one ACE, and about one in eight people have 4 or more ACEs. So it's everywhere. To your question, so we decided to do is pick sort of a niche in mental health to be great at one thing. We didn't want to be, again, all things to all people, because I think that approach too often fails. And so we said, look, we're going to be great at psychiatry. And what does that mean? Well, as you know, in mental health, there are a whole slew of different professionals, and sometimes the alphabet soup of sort of providers can get confusing. And so, what we decided to do is focus on the medical side of mental health, where we are led by and staffed by psychiatrists. I'd say about half of our provider are psychiatrists, and we have almost 30 providers now. And so about half of our providers are psychiatrists, and we have geriatric psychiatry, addiction psychiatry, general psychiatry, child psychiatry. So we have several subspecialists. And then the remaining members of our teams are nurse practitioners, so psychiatric nurse practitioners and physician assistants. And so, so it's kind of a multidisciplinary approach, thinking about several subspecialties, but the focus again is on the medical side. And that doesn't mean always medicating. I think there's a little bit of a myth. And again, I know some of us psychiatrists probably reinforce that myth, so that's unfortunate, who maybe are too quick to medicate or sometimes write too many prescriptions. But in general, a well-trained psychiatrist or psychiatric provider, the idea is really you spend the first 1 or 2 sessions to truly try to understand what's happening with your patient, before you really start thinking about a treatment plan that may or may not involve medications. What's nice about being on the medical side of delivering mental health care is one of the things I can do, my colleagues can do, is try to understand, okay, is there a medical, kind of organic medical cause for what's happening? You know, is there chronic pain? Is there insomnia? Is there an underlying infection? Is there a thyroid problem that are maybe contributing? And really thinking about exploring those possibilities before jumping in and prescribing medication and being kind of too quick to make a diagnosis. And so especially in psychiatrists in general, as mental health professionals, we're trained, you know, we go to medical school first, then we go to residency, and again, are trained as medical professionals first. And then during residency, we're all trained to deliver different kinds of psychotherapies too. CBT, psychodynamic psychotherapy, motivational interviewing. So, you know, those of us who have been well-trained have deep expertise in delivering psychotherapy. So again, I think we're well-positioned as quarterbacks in mental health to help understand what's the type of treatment a patient may need. And again, sometimes it involves medication, sometimes it doesn't. But the healthcare system, because there's so few of us psychiatrists, and like you alluded to, a child psychiatrist, we're often called on to really focus on the medical side and be the one that prescribes or doesn't prescribe, which, again, we all actually love doing psychotherapy. The problem is there aren't enough of us to be able to kind of do psychotherapy and medication management. So we're often called on to focus on the medication management piece. But we all actually love doing psychotherapy, talking to families. And we also do understand the power of working with families, individuals and psychotherapy. We understand the power of that.
Yeah. And that's a really critical. And I really appreciate that you had mentioned that just because you're a psychiatrist doesn't automatically mean you're going to prescribe medication. You might, if it's warranted, but to me, a lot of people have that stigma. Oh, I don't want to go to a psychiatrist because as soon as I walk in there, I'm going to walk out with a prescription.
Right.
Maybe, but you're saying not necessarily with that you're wanting to explore all areas. It's more holistic. It's trying to be inquisitive and say, okay, where is this coming from? Could it be this? Could it be this? Could it be this? And you're looking at it from a more medical, biological, rather than just pharmacological perspective. Yep.
Well, exactly. I mean, I think about this, and we're trained, and again, and hopefully in most training programs, people are taught to really think about the patients we work with in several dimensions. Sort of one approach is kind of thinking about, there's a biopsychosocial model of thinking about this. That means when I spend time with a patient, I think about that patient in three dimensions, the biological, the psychological, and the social, right? The social means, you know, what kind of family are they living in? Are they rich? Are they poor? And so because they're rich or poor, what are the pros and cons of being in that socioeconomic class? What kind of schools do they go to? Is there bullying going on in the school? How are they doing in school? What's going on with family members? Then the psychological side means, how does that person view the world? How do they interact with the world? How do they interact with mom or dad, with their family members, with their friends? And then the biological side is, all right, is there genetic history of any mental illness in the family? And what are some other biological problems or conditions that might come into play? And so really, so if you think about it across those three dimensions, clearly medication isn't the one that's going to really solve all three of those dimensions if you're thinking about it more holistically. So no, absolutely. And in fact, some of the most powerful interventions, you know, when I think about it with children, is maybe writing a letter to the school and saying, hey, you know, my patient, Johnny here, is being bullied and you guys aren't doing anything about it. Why do you think he's anxious now? You know, why do you think he's having trouble sleeping? So I don't give the kid an anxiety medication and a sleep med. I try to figure out, okay, there's bullying going on at the school. What are we doing about it? And why isn't the school addressing that?
Mm-hmm. I like that. That is, I think, a missing component in a lot of psychiatry, not point fingers at anyone, but I think a lot of times we need to look at and be in almost like an investigator and try to figure out where is this coming from, because it may not necessarily be a biological, it may be environmental. And you know, trying to discover that, you can just imagine a parent coming to you and they're in agony, because I've talked to a lot of parents about their child. They're in agony. They want to help their child with whether it's anxiety or depression or just having suicidal thoughts, whatever it may be, the struggle. And they're coming to you and they say, I don't know where to go. I don't know what to do. I just want to help my child.
Yep.
And for you to have that three-dimensional thinking that it could be something else. It could be something that is a lot better to address than a medication. And yes, maybe it is a bullying. Maybe it's environmental. Maybe it's even in the home. That's one of the things I recognize pretty quickly. Kids with ACEs usually have parents with ACEs. And it's a repeating cycle. And so I really love the emphasis on those hard to reach and those smaller areas in America. They're all over. And in every state, there are areas that have really a hard time getting that mental health treatment that they so much deserve. So that's great.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
So what are a couple of things that you think of when it, because obviously you really kind of thought through what your approach was going to be with Frontier Psychiatry, and you specifically targeted, you want to help those hard to reach places in America. What were some criteria that you came to of why rural America?
Sure. Couple of things. You know, first of all, having, you know, been here now 11 years, I think I've developed a pretty deep understanding of what the needs are of rural Americans who are struggling with mental health problems and addiction problems. You know, it's interesting. You know, if you're someone who experiences, let's say, severe depression, and you live in small town Montana, or you live, let's say there are two people with severe depression. One lives in small town Montana, the other one lives in New York City. Depression is depression, right? So you're going to have severe depression, and it's going to feel it's going to feel the same in both places. But what's different is what your outcomes are going to be different. In other words, your access to resources are going to be very different. So the way severe depression is going to be treated in those two communities can be very different. Right. I'm not saying it's super easy to get access to great care in New York City. I'm not making that claim. But what I am saying is that, you know, within a couple blocks, you're going to have probably one or two hospitals that'll probably have psychiatrists accessible, probably a choice of therapists. And I know there are at least three psychiatry training programs, if not four, in New York City. We're going to have psychiatry residents and on and on and on and on. Right. So, again, I understand there are going to be barriers to care there as well. But if you're somebody with severe depression in a town of 5,000 people in Montana, number one, you're likely not going to have a hospital. So if you're in crisis, you're probably not going to be able to get to a hospital quickly in your own town. You may have to be transported. Let's say that person experienced suicidal thoughts. That person will be transported to the closest hospital, which, again, might be an hour away. And the way they're transported, it's not always going to be in a friendly ambulance. It could be in a cop car. And then when they get to the hospital, it's still going to be a small hospital that probably doesn't have a psychiatrist. And so again, just that scenario alone, having somebody in crisis, let's say with suicidal thoughts and severe depression, the outcome is going to be very different. Next, let's say that person gets identified, let's say by a primary care doc, as someone who needs help. And let's say they're not in crisis, but they're struggling. They have severe depression, but they're not feeling suicidal, but we need to get them care. Well, if, again, the resources in a city are more ample than they are in a small town in Montana. So, you know, if there is a local therapist and you go in person, it might be a neighbor, it might be a cousin, it might be somebody you grew up with. And you're going to want some level of anonymity. And so that's going to be maybe strange. So you want to avoid that. The other thing is, so that might be a barrier to trying to get care. The other thing is if the patient does need medication, and in general, the way I think about it, if somebody's struggling with mild to moderate mental health problems and symptoms, chances are with good psychotherapy, you can get through that. When you go from somewhere between moderate and severe mental health symptoms or addiction symptoms, that's when you probably need to get help with some medication that can be helpful. Again, that's just kind of a rule of thumb. It's, you know, there are exceptions to everything, but that's a way to kind of think about it. So again, if you have somebody with severe depression, small town, there's no psychiatrist there. And so how do you go find a psychiatrist? And again, even if there were a psychiatrist there, do you want to go to the small town psychiatrist who probably knows everybody you know? And so that again creates all sorts of issues. So that's a long way of saying, John, that having a mental health problem or a substance use disorder in a small town in a rural community, again, your symptoms are the same, but the outcomes will be different because your resources are different. You know, there's something, as I'm sure you've heard and know about, they're called social determinants of health. And social determinants of health are the non-medical, the variables that aren't directly related to the medical practice that you have access to. These are kind of the other barriers, right? So socioeconomic, geographic, distance, on and on and on. And so those determinants of health are very different in rural America than they are in urban or suburban America. And so again, I think having learned that by being in Montana for the last 11 years, understanding there's a difference and really trying to address those differences and being more prescriptive, I think that's really informed the way we're doing that. And the other thing is, you know, there are lots of telehealth companies that are trying to grow at a breakneck speed, trying to say, hey, I'm in 30 states right now, ready to go. You know, I don't think healthcare works that way. You know, healthcare is still very locally informed, right? If you're struggling with mental illness, I don't know how, you know, if you have the choice to kind of reach out to your primary care doc and say, hey, I'm struggling with, I need some help, that tends to be the way people go and try to get trusted help rather than, hey, let me go find an app. Again, I'm not saying some people don't, and if there's nothing else, maybe people do that. But I think if you have the ability to connect with somebody local who you trust, that's probably the way to go and lead to more engaging treatment. So we're trying to grow deliberately, slowly. Like I said, we've been in Montana for 4.5 years doing this. We've expanded into Idaho and then Alaska, but we're trying to move the needle in every state we move into rather than be able to put a newspaper headline nobody uses newspapers anymore, but you know, but you know what I'm saying? An online sort of post that says, hey, we're in 30 states. I don't care about that. I want to care about if I'm doing a great job in the states I'm serving, and can I point to that? That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah. I like that. Ethical growth. I think that's so important and knowing the values and as a company's personal values, professional values, and company values. And that is kind of your aligning how you grow. It's not how quickly you grow, it's how you grow. And I like that. So here's a question that somebody might be thinking of. Let's say somebody's listening to this right now, and either they are living in a rural area or they have a loved one in a rural area, having a hard time trying to figure out where do they go to get help for their mental health? Or it's the access to maybe a mental health agency or psychiatrist, the wait, the backlog, it's this backlog for months. What do they do? What are some suggestions for that you would have for that person who wants to get the help, but they can't find it? Where could they go to try to locate help?
It's a great question. You know, if, again, putting myself in the shoes of someone, and let's say, you know, obviously today I can say if they're in Montana or Idaho, you know, go to our website, frontier.care, and you can self-refer and self-schedule. And, you know, our wait is never more than 4 weeks. That's one of the things we've really prided ourselves on, is trying to cut down on those wait times, because as we know, the longer you wait to get a problem addressed, the more severe it can become and the outcomes get worse. But that aside, you know, my recommendation would be always start with your primary care provider. You know, the primary care providers, especially in rural America, I've been really impressed with the quality and the thoughtfulness with which a lot of these primary care providers really care for their patients. Many of them that I've run into and met, they'll do extra training, understanding that many of their patients show up, you know, a good percentage of people who show up to primary care are actually showing up because of a mental health problem. And so I've been really impressed with the quality of mental health care that some of these primary care providers are able to provide. And so I would start there. And so not everybody knows that, you know, the primary care provider can be helpful. And so often that's great first place to start. And they can often start a medication that'll get you on your way. But, you know, if the problem remains, and again, primary care docs and providers are generally pretty good with mild to moderate disease, mental illness and substance use disorders. And if it becomes more complicated than that, you know, a lot of them have the ability to, they know who the providers are they can call on and reach out to try to get someone in, you know, if it's more emergent. They'll have a list of therapists that they know that they can go to. And many primary care offices are now really being more assertive with bringing in mental health professionals into their practice, doing more what's called integrated, you know, behavioral health. So again, I would start there, because, you know, these primary care providers also, they go to conferences, they get education. So a lot of education is often coming their way. So they're being exposed to a lot of resources. Other places I would consider going, you know, calling NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Every state has a chapter, and so reaching out to the local chapter of NAMI or Mental Health America. So patient advocacy organizations can also often be helpful, and they often have like fantastic and very passionate advocates that work within the agency who they'll scramble to help you out. In terms of, for example, military veterans who are looking for help to get mental health concerns or substance use disorders treated. You know, the VA sadly is often slow to get patients in. I know that there are veterans who are reaching out to their senators to really kind of shake the trees and get appointments more quickly. And so, why not? So, you know, it's unfortunate that you have to go to these lengths to advocate for yourself. But, you know, if there's a loved one, because if you're someone who's kind of struggling, right, as you're hearing, it's hard enough to get help if you're feeling okay, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're really feeling down, you have severe, you know, let's say depressive or anxious anxiety symptoms, you're really struggling. So trying to advocate for yourself can be difficult. So if you can really lean into your kind of primary care office, a nurse, a social worker there, you know, reaching out to one of these advocacy organizations, really to get an advocate behind you to try to get in. Those are some of the things I would recommend.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah. Those are all very, very good suggestions. And we really do have to advocate for ourselves. And some people are so depressed that they have a hard time advocating for themselves, but if they can find somebody that could do it perhaps on their behalf and help them navigate that, I think it's so important. But I think this is an issue that's a problem all across America in rural, not just rural, but you mentioned earlier, even in bigger cities. But the quality or the resources are very, very limited, and they are very much a barrier among rural Americans. And so I really appreciate you really bringing a spotlight on this and highlighting this not only the barrier, but what you're doing to help break that barrier. One last question, and I'm really curious, this is about the future, your future plans. I know you mentioned that you don't want to grow too fast. You want to have quality. But does Frontier Psychiatry have other plans? Maybe it's out there. And if you're okay to share what some of those ideas are and plans, I would love to know. And then we'll wrap up.
Sure. No. So yes, we do. We're really trying to embrace innovation. It's some of that is technological, and some of it is sort of a different approach. So, innovation doesn't always mean an app or IT or a new gizmo, right? I feel that, I've been a psychiatrist, a full-time psychiatrist, I guess, for 11 years. And I would tell you the 11 years that I've been a psychiatrist, every single year I read plenty of headlines that say, oh, we got a crisis, we got a crisis, we got a crisis. Pretty sick of it, actually. At this point, it's not a crisis anymore. It's really the new normal. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty sad and pathetic. I feel that we psychiatrists, we own some of that. And there was a great post on LinkedIn by a prominent psychiatrist who I really applauded him for doing this. He said, you know what? Here we are. We continue to report that we have a mental health crisis, but this has happened on our watch. Mm. Right? This happened on my watch. That means I'm not doing enough. That means we're not doing enough, or we're not doing the right things. But whatever we're doing, we got to stop doing what we've been doing, and we got to change things up here. Because trying to pretend that incremental change every year is going to change outcomes. Nope. Because if we continue this way 10 years from now, John, we'll have another meeting like this, and we'll say, we have a mental health crisis. Yeah, no kidding. Mm-hmm. Because we've been doing things the same, and we continue to do things the same. You have thousands of papers coming out, academic papers from academic psychiatry, academic psychology, talking about this new treatment, that new treatment, this new receptor, that new receptor. Well, I don't know, but I'm not going to make a lot of friends, but I don't know if that's not all that useful. If we're still having these problems, whatever people are generating is not that useful. Right? Because there are still people who can't get access to the right dose of Prozac. And in the meantime, we're trying to crank out all these papers and create these fancy new clinics to deliver ketamine into these, really populated areas where there are people in rural America who can't get the right dose of Prozac. They can't get access to quality cognitive behavioral therapy. So what the heck are we doing? Right? So that's a little bit of a rant. So what I'm trying to do, what our company, what our practice is trying to do, is really embrace innovation and lean into things that can scale access to mental health. And we have to be creative. We have to think outside the box, and we're going to have to do some things that are uncomfortable. I mean, think about how long it took, right? Telehealth has been around for like 30, 40 years, embraced by Montana in the early 90s. And people are still, and I still hear people are saying, well, I think in person is better. Really? Is it better for you? Is it better for you? Or what about the rest of the people that could never access anything unless there was telehealth? Right? So let's think about it from the patient's perspective. And what I challenge people to think about as well, if you live again in a small town in Montana and you don't have the luxury of going, do I want in person because that feels nicer? Or do I want telehealth? Well, you don't get that luxury. Right. So it's up to us, people like me and other of my colleagues in psychiatry, to really do things that are game changers, think outside the box. And it's our job to bring great care to our patients. And we have to act with a sense of urgency. We can't just say, well, let's create a couple of committees and study for a couple of years. Well, Tell that to the people who are showing up in emergency rooms every day. So again, I'm ranting. So what are my thoughts? Well, so we do have plans. So we do have plans to expand probably about 2 new states every year for the next 5-6 years, focusing on, you know, the Intermountain West, the Great Plains states, and then embracing innovation as it comes. So again, some of that is you know, embracing technology to make sure that we're standardizing evidence-based and high-quality clinical interventions. There's something, as actually I posted about it once on LinkedIn, there's a wonderful researcher, and this is the kind of researcher I love, Dr. Jessica Schleider. She's from Northwestern University, and she runs a lab called the Lab for Scalable Mental Health. We need like 100 of those labs. The Lab for Scalable Mental Health, and she's studying and has been studying what are called single session interventions. Again, that's just an example of the kind of work that needs to be done to scale access to great care, right? Because again, if you create an intervention that's, you know, 10 weeks of, you know, 3 sessions a week of a certain type of therapy that has to happen in person and near an academic center, you're not going to get out to the people that really need this. And so those are our plans. Our plans to continue growing, along the rural states in this part of the world, in this part of the country, Alaska, Montana, Wyoming. Again, 3 states with the highest suicide rates. And right around those states, you have states with similar problems with, you know, poor access to care, big geographic distances and barriers, big numbers of Native American population, disproportionately represented here, with a lot of intergenerational trauma, high numbers of military veterans with, again, lots of vulnerabilities, including having been to fight for our country and in different parts of the world and having PTSD. So again, this is in some ways ground zero of the mental health crisis in our country. So this, we felt very strongly, this is where we need to get started.
I love it. I love your vision, your passion. I love what you're doing. So I just really commend you and your colleagues there at Frontier Psychiatry. And if you're a psychiatrist listening to this, I want you to look into this company. Reach out to Dr. Arzubi and get on board with this. We need more of this. This is the true innovation of mental health, in my opinion. It's not all the widgets and gadgets that are out there, as you mentioned. So thank you so much, Dr. Eric Arzubi, the CEO of Frontier Psychiatry, and they're doing some great things there. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, John. It's been a privilege, and thanks for letting me rant.
Yeah, no, I love it. Those are some of the best moments, I think. So I appreciate you sharing your heart and your mind with us today. And thank you, everybody, for listening to the Mental Health Today Show, this episode. I appreciate you. And until next time, take care of yourself and continue to work on your mental health. Take care, my friends. Bye-bye.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? It's hard to make time for the things that keep you healthy. But being consistent with self-care is like working a muscle. And when life gets crazy, that muscle keeps you strong. Therapy is the ultimate self-care. And BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online sessions you can do from anywhere. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.